Hello and welcome to Volume 45, Number 35 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 29th of August 2025. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Dusty, Margaret and Julie. And in the news this week, the Empire is to close. Beware of cold callers. And don't panic, but there's a crab shortage. Loads of news this week, unlike last, but still no birthdays. So it's straight over to the ladies for the first of this week's local news.
An offshore worker knocked a man out and repeatedly punched a woman in the face and pulled her hair during a drunken attack at a railway station. Lee Rogers, 54, got into an altercation with another group of people when they got off the train at Great Yarmouth Station after a night out in Norwich. Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court heard that on the journey back to Great Yarmouth from Norwich after the night out, Rogers asked to buy a beer off the other group of people, who then insulted him. When they all got off the train at around 11:30 p.m. on February the 28th, Rogers grabbed one of the men and threw multiple punches at him, causing him to fall to the floor and be unconscious for several minutes. A woman then confronted Rogers, and the offshore worker brutally attacked her, pushing her against the wall, pulling her hair, kicking her, and repeatedly punching her in the face. Rogers of Grebe Gardens in Borough Castle pleaded guilty to actual bodily harm against the man and an assault by beating charge for the attack on the woman. John Cooper, prosecuting, played a video of the fracas, which was caught on CCTV to the court. The shocking footage showed Rogers raising both his arms in the air in celebration after he knocked the man out and before he attacked the woman. Both groups left the scene just as the police arrived, Mr. Cooper said. Lisa Day, mitigating, told magistrates her client is a gentleman who's not been in trouble for 33 years and that he has a stable family life and works offshore. Rogers has been released on unconditional bail and is due to appear at Norwich Crown Court on September the 29th.
A homeless man phoned police to report himself because he was desperate to return to prison, a court heard. Paul Frost, 54, deliberately breached a court order by going to an area of Great Yarmouth he is banned from entering before dialing 999. Norwich Magistrate Court was told it was a desperate attempt to be returned to prison after he was evicted from his home. Frost, who previously lived at Deanside in Great Yarmouth, was made subject of a criminal behaviour order, that's a CBO, in March that bans him from entering parts of town, including the marketplace, for 3 years. The prolific offender, who has 53 previous convictions, pleaded guilty to failing to comply with the CBO on August 21st. Annette Hall, mitigating, said he had been evicted from his long-term accommodation and so very desperately and deliberately he decided to breach the order and then called the police from a phone box. District Judge Matthew Bone jailed him for 6 weeks, saying his actions had been deliberate and flagrant. He said, I completely disregard your motive for breaching the order and I base your sentence entirely on the guidelines, bearing in mind your previous offences.
Well, hello, everybody. After those happy news items, I think best time we have a sugar fix. So I've got a nice one here to tell you about a queue for the launch of the bakery in Stalham. Two best friends are celebrating after a sweet start at their new bakery. Sammy Sparrow and Kelly Kelly, how lovely, welcomed the first customers to Bake a Wish in Stalham's High Street on Saturday. And they said the first day could not have gone any better. It went incredibly well, the pair said. We sold out of bread by mid-morning and all of the sweet treats had gone before we closed. We had people queuing before we opened. It was a very successful day. The two became close while working at another cafe in the town and soon realised they had complementary skills that made them a great team. Sammy, 30, has 15 years of catering experience and trained at Great Yarmouth College, while Kelly, aged 45, ran her own cake business in Hull before moving to Norfolk during the pandemic. They feel they work best when Sammy focuses on the baking and Kelly brings the finishing touches with her decorating skills. They previously explained that Stalham was their dream location to start the business. It's where we live, and we had already built up great relationships with people here, they said. Bake a Wish is starting out with a range of fresh bread, cakes, sausage rolls, pies and pasties. I think I have to have a trip over there.
A global beach clean. People are being invited to a Great Yarmouth beach clean-up. The event will be held on Friday, August the 29th, as part of the Sea Life Trust's Global Beach Clean. The clean-up, which is free to participate in, will take place from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. and is suitable for families. People are encouraged to sign up to help to tackle the estimated 26 million tonnes of plastic pollution that end up in the oceans annually. The pollution not only chokes, entangles and poisons marine life, but also kills millions of marine creatures each year. Past clean-ups have found plastic bags, disposable cutlery, old phone covers, drink bottles and batteries among the items collected. These items pose a significant threat to marine life, whether they remain in rivers or are washed into the ocean. The clean-up provides an opportunity for the community to help protect marine life and preserve the natural beauty of Great Yarmouth beaches. To participate, individuals should apply on the Sea Life Great Yarmouth website.
Lifeboat was launched to save a boat stuck under a bridge on the Norfolk Broads. It happened at St Olive's Bridge in the early hours of Saturday, August the 23rd. The Coast Guard tasked Hemsby Lifeboat and the crew quickly responded. They collected an engineer from the hire company who helped them to free the pleasure craft and transport it to a secure mooring. The Galston Coast Guard team met them at the mooring, and the Hemsby crew was stood down when it was confirmed that everybody on board was safe and well.
Under the cover of darkness, modified vehicles with throaty exhausts and crackling revs have turned roads into impromptu racetracks along the Norfolk coast. In Galston and Great Yarmouth, frustrated neighbours say the late-night noise is relentless, with popping exhausts, engines crackling and deafening revs from boy racers keeping them up. The racket echoes through streets into the early hours of the morning. Locals on Lurstoft Road in Galston say it's every night they hear vehicles tearing past. What I don't understand is that the Galston police station is literally on this road. They must hear and see it like everyone else does, one woman said. The cameras, which have been put in key locations in Yarmouth, just seem to bring people out these days. I think they use that as a racetrack. All the roads outside where the police are monitoring. In October, local authorities were considering a clampdown that could see more noise cameras rolled out across Norfolk to deter and catch illegally modified vehicles. It follows a sound camera device which was fitted on Marine Parade in Great Yarmouth as part of a trial in 2022. It then became permanent in the summer of 2024. The cameras can detect excessive noise, capturing evidence of revving engines and illegal exhaust, while helping to build enforcement cases. Locals hope the crackdown will finally bring back some peaceful nights. The cameras need to be put on Lowestoft Road since the police, who are based on the road, seemingly can't cope, the woman added. But not all people seem disturbed at the noise. I sleep very deeply, one man said in Lowestoft Road. During Storm Irwin in January, when trees were sent flying, there were flash floods. I slept through the night like a baby. Lucky fellow. When I went to the shop in the morning, I saw a friend and I said, "Oh, we had a bit of rain last night," which made them laugh. So I don't hear the boy racers, but I am aware that they are here, and it is undoubtedly a problem. Typically Norfolk understatement, I would say.
A Norfolk Broads boating holiday and tour company has been taken over in a multi-million pound deal. Norfolk Broads Direct Holdings Limited, the parent company of Wroxham-based Norfolk Broads Direct and Broads Tours, has been acquired by Broads Venture Limited. The takeover was led by Greg Munford, who formed Broads Ventures in partnership with Paul Richardson to purchase the shares in Norfolk Broads Direct Holdings. Norfolk Broads Direct has been offering boating holidays on the Broads since 1878. It operates a fleet of 60 holiday hire cruisers, 4 passenger river trip boats, and more than 50 day boats, alongside a portfolio of waterside holiday properties. The company employs around 50 staff and welcomes more than 115,000 guests to the Broads National Park each year. Greg Munford, co-director of the Norfolk Broads Direct Holdings, is chief executive of local boating holiday company Richardson's Leisure. He has previously served as chairman of Southampton International Boat Show, president of British Marine, and chairman of Broad Tourism. He has also spent 8 years as the Secretary of State, appointed to the Broads Authority. Fellow director Paul Richardson has dedicated more than 34 years to his family business, Richardson's, bringing a wealth of experience to the role. As part of the acquisition, Ruth Knight will join the Broads Ventures board as a non-executive director. She previously served as chair of Visit the Broads. Speaking on behalf of Broads Ventures, Mr. Munford said, "We would like to thank Len, Hazel and Ruth for giving us the privilege of acquiring the business and greatly value Craft Leisure's investment in Broads Ventures as a chosen buyer. The trust that Len has shown in us by giving us the opportunity to continue his legacy of a true pioneer and innovator of modern-day Broads tourism is a responsibility not lost on us. We're committed to nurturing and building on the brand and the strong reputation that Norfolk Broads Direct has for delighting its guests, and we look forward to working with the team to fulfil our purpose, enabling people to fall in love with the Broads National Park."
An award-winning butcher in Bradwell has been given a 0 food hygiene rating. Bradwell Butchery received the lowest score following an inspection by Great Yarmouth Borough Council on July the 3rd. The Crab Lane shop, which also has a bakery and deli, was told it needs to improve the cleanliness and condition of the facilities and the building, as well as the management of food safety. Andrew Edmonds, owner of the business, said that they have already addressed the issues raised by the inspector and have applied for a re-inspection. Following the inspection, the site was warned it required urgent improvement. It checks made to ensure food is safe to eat. A report by the food safety officers said that the staff lacked basic food safety knowledge and were unaware of the procedures that had to follow. No staff training was evident, and it was clear that staff are not supervised and food safety knowledge was lacking, it said. The inspector found mice droppings behind old equipment in the back room alongside lots of old food and dirt. They also said the food in the walk-in fridge was not labelled, flooring throughout the whole business was dirty, and that high-level cleaning was required throughout the whole shop. Mr. Edmonds said, "I am unhappy that the situation has been. We have pulled our socks up and addressed everything that needed to be addressed." He said staff have worked jolly hard these last 3 weeks and the shop has applied for another inspection. Bradwell Butchery has been open since 1986 and, according to Mr. Edmonds, has never previously had any health issues. "I'm very proud of my business. It's a bit upsetting we face this situation," he said. The business won the Midlands and East of England's Butchery Shop of the Year in 2010.
A group of charity rowers, a Norfolk MP mistook for illegal migrants aboard a dinghy, has seen a surge in donations following the blunder. The Row for MND team said they collected donations of more than £30,000 following the incident earlier this month involving Rupert Lowe, MP for Great Yarmouth. The former Reform MP, who now sits as an independent, was left red-faced after he posted online claiming that dinghies carrying migrants were attempting to land in the town. In a post on X on August the 7th, he wrote, "Dinghies coming into Great Yarmouth right now," alongside a grainy picture of the ocean rowing boat, before acknowledging his mistake the following day. Mr. Lowe later donated £1,000 to the rowers' cause. The Row for MND team, consisting of Aaron Kneebone, Liz Wardley, Mike Bates and Matt Parker, is aiming to raise money for research into motor neurone disease by circumnavigating Britain. The group completed the first leg last week. Mr. Bates, a former Royal Marine and rowing record holder, said, "We'd like to thank Rupert Lowe, MP, for inadvertently bringing the eyes of the world onto our crew, which has opened the floodgates in terms of donations." Mr. Parker, co-founder of the Row for MND project, said the comments left by people making donations to the team had got them through the tough times on the row. "While we may have been fortunate in that the migrant story made Row for MND huge news, the media and public interest has now shifted from Rupert's tweet to everyone wanting to talk to us about raising £57 million, he said. Mr. Lowe's erroneous message drew a crowd of people out onto Great Yarmouth Beach, who flashed torches at the rowers from the shoreline. The Coast Guard and lifeboat crews along the Norfolk coast were also alerted.
The Regent's Ambulance Trust has been accused of leaving pregnant women out of pocket in a discrimination claim from three frontline workers. The East of England Ambulance Service Trust is facing a pregnancy and maternity discrimination claim from three of its staff. The trio, who are all pregnant and have been moved off frontline duties, say their temporary new roles has left them out of pocket. It relates to the way their redeployments have left them losing on social hours entitlements, which they would have been receiving in their usual roles. The GMB union, which is supporting the women through their claim, described this as discriminatory. Donna Thomas, GMB regional organiser, said most pregnant women are stood down from frontline ambulance work to keep them safe and their unborn child safe. The health and safety of pregnant women is essential, and so is their financial security. GMB is deeply disappointed to hear further allegations that EEAST continues to discriminate against pregnant women staff by failing to pay them the unsocial hours that they would have been paid if they were not stood down. While the three women directly involved in the claim are not from Norfolk and Waveney, it is understood the issue is also affecting others in the region. The Trust, however, said the matter had been resolved and a new way of mitigating for the financial losses was being introduced. A spokesman said, "Operational staff are paid a bonus for working unsocial hours. Those staff who are moved to alternate working duties because of pregnancy continue to be paid this bonus. Because of shift variation, we calculate an average of this unsocial hours bonus over a 3-month period. We've now resolved a grievance case over how that level is calculated, and colleagues have been paid in full. In future, the Trust will work with the employees to select 3 months from the last 12 to ensure the average is a fair representation of average hours worked across 3 months."
Locals are being warned to be on their guard after a rise in doorstep cold calls in Norfolk. Norfolk County Council issued the alert after a spike in reports of people knocking on doors and offering to complete work. In Great Yarmouth, the cold callers claimed to be from the local council and said the loft insulation that was previously installed at their property was causing damp and rot. They claimed it needed to be replaced immediately. In Earlham, near Norwich, people reported cold callers knocking and offering roof repairs. A spokesman for the council said, "Our advice is never deal with doorstep cold callers. This includes never allowing a cold caller access to your property or gardens, never agreeing to further visits from them or other people, and never agreeing to have work done on or around your property if approached in this way. No matter what claims or special offers are made to try and persuade you. Anyone citing cold callers in Norfolk, please contact us through our partners, the Citizens Advice Consumer Helpline on 0808 223 113 or Norfolk Police via 101. I'll repeat that. The helpline is 0808 223 113 or Norfolk Police via 101.
Major work to improve the centre of Great Yarmouth has been declared complete after a £5.8 million regeneration project was finished. The work on the market area in Great Yarmouth Town Centre began in June last year, with new paving, benches, lighting and planters being installed. The project on the piazza area began after more than £5 million was spent on building a new covered market. On the piazza opening, Great Yarmouth Borough Council said in a statement, "We're delighted to share that the public realm works in Great Yarmouth Marketplace are now complete. Over the years, the marketplace has seen many changes, and while each left its mark, the space had become cluttered and busy. This redevelopment has transformed it into a welcoming open piazza-style square at the very heart of our town. The old covered market had served us well for 25 years, but as maintenance became increasingly challenging, it was time for a fresh start. This not only improves facilities for traders, but alongside the updated public realm work, It creates a vibrant piazza-style space linking the new covered market with the place, opening up opportunities for even more community life in the town centre. Among the changes are a newly paved cohesive square with planters and benches for everyone to enjoy, a decluttered streetscape removing outdated furniture to create space and flow, and a brighter, more inviting environment connecting the marketplace to the place, of course, which is the new name for the library, the council says.
More than 100 trucks travelled in convoy from Norwich to Lowestoft as one of the region's best-loved events returned for its 38th year. The journey is organised by the East Coast Truckers Charity, which aims to provide fun experiences for disadvantaged and disabled children across East Anglia. These include trips to the circus, Christmas parties and holidays in their holiday homes. The 2025 fleet was one of the biggest yet, and thousands gathered in lay-bys, on roundabouts and on verges along the route to cheer them on. This year, they left their starting point at the Poswick Park and Ride outside Norwich at 9:30 a.m. and arrived at Pleasurewood Hills in Lowestoft at around midday. The group spent the afternoon at the theme park before heading to Great Yarmouth Seafront, each chauffeuring a disabled or disadvantaged child to sit up high in the cab.
More news shortly, but first though, the details of Vision Norfolk's September activities. Monday, the 1st of September, there's a visit to the Hippodrome Circus. Please be aware that this is fully booked, but a waiting list is available. The month's coffee mornings start on Tuesday the 2nd with Caister from 10 until 12. But please note there's no session on the 16th for Caister due to the Rabbit Hutch being closed. The Yarmouth Caffeine Hits start on Wednesday the 3rd from 10 a.m. until 12 noon, with more at the same time on the 10th, the 17th and the 24th. The Martham Coffee Morning is on the 4th from 10 until 12. Yoga sessions for September are on Wednesday the 3rd and the 17th from 12:30 until 1:30. And games mornings are from 10 until 12 on Thursday the 4th, the 11th, the 18th and the 25th. And weaving is from 10 until 12 on Friday the 5th, the 12th and the 19th. Friday the 5th is Fishy Friday, with service from 1 until 2. Bowling is on Tuesday the 9th from 12 noon until 3 p.m, whilst Thursday the 11th is knit, stitch and natter time between 1 and 3. If you fancy some creative writing, then Friday the 12th is for you from 1 p.m. until 3 p.m. And a new addition to the schedule is an open games evening, and this is between 6 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. on Tuesday the 16th. Please speak to the staff for more information on that one. There's a trip to Fairhaven Water Gardens on Tuesday the 23rd. Please speak to the staff to book. Thursday the 25th is the seafront walk for the month from 1 p.m. until 3 p.m. whilst for the less energetic, the next day, Friday the 25th, is the September rug workshop from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Friday the 26th of September it's the Audio Book Club from 1:30 until 3 p.m. And for more info about that, please get in touch with Mark or Helen on 01603 573 000 extension 341. And finally, the 30th of September is the monthly tennis session from 10 until 12. Well, we have a couple of special events from Vision Norfolk, which I'll tell you about after part two of the local news. So back to the ladies.
Cromer Fisherman, whose family has worked the sea for 8 generations, says it has been a tough season for crabs, but lobsters are doing okay. John Davis, 60, has fished all his life and runs Davis Fish Shop in Garden Street, Cromer. As well as stocking his own counter, he supplies fishmongers along the coast as far as Lowestoft. But this summer, he says, the catch has been far from predictable. It's been a difficult season and they haven't been as plentiful as normal years, he said. Whether it's something to do with the water temperature, I don't know. Earlier on in the season, we were seeing quite a lot of crab and then they just disappeared, the small ones and everything. That makes you wonder whether they're feeding on something different, because if they don't want to eat what we're putting in the pots, you're not going to catch them. While the crab pots have been light, lobster has been more abundant. There's been a nice lot of lobsters, he said. You often find that if you get a poor run of crabs, you do catch more lobsters. They're not good neighbours, and they don't get on very well, so one will keep the other out. Although lobster is more valuable per catch, Mr. Davis said Cromer's reputation means crabs remain central to his trade. Crabs are your bread and butter, and people come to Cromer after a Cromer crab, he said. Fishing from his boat, the Richard William, which is named after his late father, Mr. Davis, takes the ups and downs of the industry in his stride. He added, we are dealing with nature and wild crustaceans. We can't guarantee they're going to be there. We have seen years like this before. It's nothing particularly new, but this year has just been hard work.
A pizza chain in the town centre has lodged a bid to extend its opening hours until 3 a.m. Now, Papa John's in the Great Yarmouth Marketplace is currently open between 11 a.m. and 11 p.m. If its application to the Great Yarmouth Borough Council is successful, the branch will be able to open between 11 a.m. and 3 a.m. from Monday to Sunday. Members of the public can submit representations for or against the bid by emailing licensing@greatyarmouth.gov.uk before September 15th.
A new art exhibition featuring more than 30 public submissions has opened in a unit in Great Yarmouth Market Gates Shopping Centre. Named Got to Be Real, the exhibition in Prime Yark is a collaboration between Original Projects and Great Yarmouth and Waveney Pride. This marks the first open exhibition for Original Projects, attracting both first-time exhibitors and established artists. The launch event, held on Saturday, August the 16th, featured poetry readings, bracelet-making workshops, and a collaborative painting titled A Show of Strength by John Barnard. Visitors to the exhibition can contribute to the painting, with hopes of completion by Saturday, September the 6th. The exhibition is open free of charge from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. every Wednesday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, until Sunday, September the 7th, the day after Yarmouth Pride finishes. On Saturday, September the 6th, the space will offer a quiet retreat for those wishing to step back from crowds but still to be part of Pride activities. Original Projects Director Carvus Clayton expressed his satisfaction with the community's response to the exhibition, especially with the support from Yarmouth Pride. He highlighted the importance of the space as a platform for artists to express their true selves, with several artists showcasing their work publicly for the first time. The exhibition features a variety of media, including digital, film and music, alongside physical pieces with spoken word and five readings also in the mix. In addition to the exhibition, free creative workshops are being conducted every Saturday. These sessions, led by local artists Josie R. and Jay Goodbrave, include bracelet and sign making for the Pride Parade and imaginative world building workshops. The Got to Be Real exhibition is part of the broader Great Yarmouth and Waveney Pride celebrations happening on September the 6th and 7th. For more information on the full programme of events, visit www.gywpride.org. I'll repeat that. Visit www.gywpride.org.
A seafront venue that has entertained people with food, drink and music for 4 years is to be shut due to rising costs and changing habits. The Empire on the Golden Mile in Great Yarmouth has announced it will close its doors on September the 13th. In a statement, the Jay family, who own the venue, described the decision as incredibly tough. They cited rising costs and changing entertainment habits that have created an unsustainable environment for independent venues nationwide. Ben Jay, director, said, "This has been an incredibly tough decision for our family, one we have wrestled with for a long time. The Empire has been more than just a business to us. It has been a passion project, a labour of love, and a true focal point for so many incredible memories. The venue reopened in 2021 as a hub for street food and live music." Mr. Jay said that despite the closure, the family is committed to keeping the historic building alive with new projects and future uses already being explored. The announcement is another blow to nightlife in the borough following the closure last year of the Ocean Room in Galston. Mr. Jay said the reasons for the closure of the Empire are complex and reflect a wider trend affecting venues across the nation. The rising costs of operation, coupled with significant changes in entertainment habits, have created an unsustainable environment for a live music venue of our kind, he said. Worryingly, the challenge does not seem unique to the Empire, with many independent venues across the UK facing a similar battle to stay open. According to figures published by the Nighttime Industries Association, the NTIA, around 800 late-night venues have closed in Britain over the past 5 years, more than a quarter of the total number. Closures has accelerated this year, with an average of 3 venues shutting each week over the past 3 months. Unfortunately, we are not immune, Mr. Jay said, adding, "We hold on to the hope that perhaps in time, music and late-night venues and culture will receive the much-needed government support they deserve." Mr. Jay expressed the family's gratitude to musicians who performed at the venue, as well as staff and customers. "We are immensely grateful for every single band, artist and performer who has graced our stage. Your talent, energy and dedication have filled the Empire with an extraordinary spirit that we will forever cherish," he said. He also mentioned their incredibly hard-working staff and crew, and loyal customers. Thank you for your unwavering support, for dancing with us, singing with us, and being a part of the Empire family, he said. Fans are being encouraged to attend the final events before doors close next month to celebrate the venue's rich legacy one last time. The Empire, built in 1911, has a rich history as a cinema, bingo hall, and the nightclubs Bourbon Street and Zen, before its current use as a music and street food venue. Designed by A.S. Hewitt, it was the second purpose-built cinema in the town. It has been owned by the Jay family since 1947. The Empire was one of Yarmouth's principal cinemas in the era when picture-going was a weekly habit for many. Its terracotta frontage, with twin pairs of imitation tall classical pillars, made it an attractive addition to the seafront scene. It was officially listed as a Grade II building of special interest in 1991. The Empire has been operating as a cinema before it closed in 2008. And in 2021, the Jay family reported the venue as a hub for street food, bars, coffee and live music. Isn't that a shame?
I find that incredibly sad.
It is.
Another piece of iconic Norfolk architecture facing its demise. Mm. And Jack was saying on the radio that he hopes it will be able to open again at some point as something else. But we never know quite what something else is going to happen to it, do we? Thank the Lord it is a listed building. And if you look at it going in there, the architecture and the ambience is really, really something different. It's a real theatre in there, you know, still behind all the facades of things. Beautiful theatre. And it's such a shame that we've lost yet another of our lovely theatres. I feel very sad about that, and I'm sure I'm just speaking for a lot of people who must have listened to that report and listened to what you just said. However, we move on. More than 8,000 parents in Norfolk have been slapped with fines for taking children out of school without permission, making council bosses upwards of £500,000. Norfolk County Council issued 8,104 penalty charge notices for unauthorised term time absences in the 24-25 academic year, despite the government hiking up the fine rates in a bid to deter parents from taking children out of school during term time. Last September, the fixed penalty notice for an unauthorised absence was increased to £80 per parent per child. This doubles to £160 if the charge is not paid within 28 days. So far, the council has received almost £600,000 from the fines from the 2024-25 academic year, with a number of payments still outstanding. Should parents opt against paying the fines, they could instead face court dates, with the council able to prosecute them under Section 44 of the Education Act. If taken to court, parents could eventually face fines of up to £2,500. The September fine increase followed what was a record year for unauthorised absences in Norfolk schools, with 10,134 parents fined in the 2023-24 academic year. To an extent, the measure had its desired impact, with fines taking a 20% year-on-year drop following the hike. However, the 2024-25 academic year still saw the second highest number of fines on record. Across the country, the vast majority, 89%, of unauthorised absence fines were issued for term time holidays. Parents choosing to take fines on the chin to secure cheaper holidays has become a long-running and divisive issue in school communities. while some argue that taking children out of school, even occasionally, disrupts their learning and potentially that of others in the class, others insist the difference is negligible. Fines have also sparked protests, with some parents holding demonstrations against them earlier this year in Norwich.
A hospital team is gearing up for a charity obstacle course. James Paget University Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust's pharmacy and intensive care unit teams, alongside NHS colleagues, friends and family, will participate in the East Anglian Air Ambulance's only The Brave race in support of the service. The air ambulance team, which has close ties to the hospital, recently saved the life of the partner of one of the pharmacy team members. In gratitude, the hospital's team, known as Team Platy, will tackle the 6 or 10 mile course at the Euston Estate in Suffolk on Sunday, September the 21st. The event, featuring up to 35 obstacles, including monkey bars and tunnels, has already raised over £1,000 for the air ambulance service, which relies entirely on community support. Paul Young from the pharmacy expressed the team's dedication. "We want to ensure we raise as much money as possible to keep this service available for us all when we need it most." The East Anglian Air Ambulance provides critical care and handles an average of 8 emergencies a day.
A riverside plot in the heart of Norfolk Broads, complete with 3 commercial units and private quay-headed moorings, is set to go under the hammer next month. The riverside development site on the Rond in Hoverton is being sold by auction through Auction House East Anglia, with a price guide of £350,000 to £400,000 plus fees. The freehold site offers a mix of buildings, including a modern 2-storey workshop with showroom, office, WC and shower room, an adjoining boat shed with covered moorings, and a warehouse. The warehouse is in need of renovation and also comes with mooring space. The units are located in a central spot among a mix of residential homes and local businesses, and with private key-headed moorings. It offers direct access to the River Bure. Auctioneers say the tucked away site has bags of potential, whether kept for commercial use, redeveloped, subject to planning of course, or transformed into a unique mixed-use investment. The auction will be live-streamed on Wednesday, September the 10th at 10 o'clock.
Excitement is building for the upcoming Great Yarmouth and Waveney Pride celebration. Set to take place at the Drill House in Great Yarmouth, the Pride main event will follow on from a procession on Saturday, September 6th. The Drill House event, which begins at 12:30 p.m, will showcase a range of drag performers and live vocalists. The entertainment will run till 6:30 p.m. To book in advance, tickets are priced at a cut price, £2.50. On the day, tickets cost £3. All children under the age of 14 must be accompanied by an adult. Ticket holders need to be inside the venue by 2 p.m. After this time, tickets can only be purchased at the door until the venue reaches full capacity. It will then operate on a one-in, one-out basis. Leaving the venue under these circumstances means re-entry cannot be guaranteed.
More than 1,000 people have paid their respects to a popular retailer and DJ. The funeral of Richard Routledge took place on Friday, August the 22nd, as a cortege made its way through Galston to the crematorium. A wake was then held at the Jube in Great Yarmouth. The procession honoured the host of the legendary Richard's Parties, which began in 1982 as a series of soul, funk and dance events that entertained thousands of people and brought top DJs like Pete Tong and Carl Cox to Great Yarmouth. His son, Mark Routledge, said, When we got through to the high street, it was full of scooters and crowds all the way down the high street. It shows how much love and respect there was for Dad, which was lovely. People from all over the area and across the whole county turned up. Mr. Routledge was also renowned for his work in men's fashion, both on the high street and in his own retail ventures, having worked in the industry for more than 40 years. In the 1980s, he operated his own shop, Bass Clothing, on Broad Row, before working as a postman for around 20 years. In 2017, he opened What Is Hip, the stylish menswear store on Galston High Street. A year later, he was honoured with the Great Yarmouth Tourism Business Lifetime Achievement Award for his outstanding contribution to the town's cultural and community life. He married Christine Rant in 1978 and they had four children, Mark, Tom, Joe and Natalie. Mr. Routledge died at the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital on July the 19th. In posts shared on social media, his wife thanked everyone for the wonderful messages and support shown to the family.
A man has pleaded guilty to outraging public decency after an incident near a park. It happened in Church Lane near the recreation ground in Galston on August the 12th at around 8:30 when a man was seen committing the act. A spokeswoman for Norfolk Constabulary said that a man in his 30s was arrested on suspicion of outraging public decency. Graham Elverstone, 35, of High Street, Galston, was subsequently charged with one count of outraging public decency. He appeared at Norwich Magistrates Court, where he pleaded guilty and was handed an £80 fine and ordered to pay a £32 victim surcharge.
Three fire engines extinguished a building blaze in Caister Village. Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service were called at 12:29 a.m. to a domestic building fire on Jordan Road in Caister-on-Sea. I actually think that means p.m. however. Three appliances attended from Great Yarmouth, Galston and Martham. Police were also in attendance. Crews wore breathing apparatus and used main jets and hose reel jets to extinguish the fire. A thermal image camera was used to check for hotspots. A stop message was received at 2:37 a.m.
Hospitality and catering students at the East Coast College have raised more than £1,800 in a fundraising event. The students organised an event at the Imperial Hotel, featuring a three-course meal, live music and a raffle, all in aid of the Sandra Chapman Centre at the James Paget University Hospital. The evening took place on June the 9th and was described as a superb team effort, with students demonstrating professionalism and determination. The event was supported by various local and national companies that donated raffle prizes. The Imperial Hotel's Grant and Peter were also thanked for lending their restaurant and kitchen to support the event.
A former village hall, which has stood empty for more than two decades, could soon be turned into a family home. Applicant Andrew Pembroke has submitted plans to convert the village hall on Moulton Road in Halvergate into a three-bedroom house, with a new kitchen and garage extension. The single-storey detached building has been vacant for around 25 years, and the applicant argues that the scheme would secure the long-term future of the site. Planning documents state the proposal would be a sensitive and sustainable reuse of a redundant community building.
Well, part three of the news will be coming shortly, but now details of those special events from Vision Norfolk that I mentioned earlier. Mark Smith Leisure Events Coordinator asked us to let you know about the following. There are 15 places available for an exhibition at the Forum in Norwich entitled Silver Wings, the US Army Air Forces in World War II Norfolk. This is on Wednesday the 17th of September from 2 until 4 p.m. Mark says, come and join us at the Forum as we visit the American Library team for a special tour of the Silver Wings exhibition. Meet the curator and learn about the behind-the-scenes process involved in exhibition making. We'll explore the stories of local people and young Americans in World War II, Norfolk and Norwich, through stories, objects and oral histories. And a handling session will be available, and you can hear from people who were there in their own words. There'll be coffee and donuts to finish the event, and a chance to share your own or your family stories of World War II. Please book by the 11th of September. Phone Helen or Mark on 01603 673000, extension 341 or 342. That's 01603 573000, extension 341 or 342, or mark.smith@visionnorfolk or one word .org.uk on the email. And there's more. These are the details for Vision Norfolk's new choir sessions. These sessions follow on from the tasters held during the summer. Everyone is welcome, and especially if you joined in the taster sessions last month. Do you love music? Ever wanted to sing in a group? Well, discover the joy of singing together. Come along to the Vision Norfolk choir sessions. And these are on the following Mondays, the 15th of September from 10:30 until 12, the 29th of September from 11:30 until 1, slightly later due to the coffee morning, the 13th of October from 10:30 until 12, the 27th of October from 11:30 until 1, the 10th of November from 10:30 until 12, the 24th of November from 11:30 till 1, and the 8th of December from 10:30 until 12. And these are all at the Bradbury Activity Centre, Beckham Place, Norwich, NR3 3DZ. No prior singing experience is needed. This is your chance to explore your voice, meet new people, and be part of something joyful. Please book in by Thursday the 11th of September by calling Helen or Mark on 01603 573000, extension 341 or 342, or email mark.smith@visionnorfolk.org.uk. OK, it's back to the ladies for the last part of this week's local news.
A woman has been slapped with a fine after stealing meat from a shop in Caister Village. The incident happened on August 20th at about 5:20 p.m. at a shop in Yarmouth Road, Caister. Danielle Masson, 44, of no fixed abode, was then arrested on suspicion of theft. She was also arrested on suspicion of breaching a criminal behaviour order and suspicion of theft from a shop in Lowestoft Road, Galston, on August the 12th. Masson was subsequently charged with 2 counts of theft from a shop and 2 counts of breaching a criminal behaviour order. She then appeared at Norwich Magistrates Court yesterday morning, where she was ordered to pay £70 in compensation for the theft in Caister. There were no penalties for the other offences and no financial penalties for costs, a spokesman confirmed.
A stabbing suspect has been released under investigation by the police following an attack during an arts and dance festival. The man from Norwich, and in his 30s, was arrested following the attack on Trafalgar Road in Great Yarmouth and bailed until August the 20th. Now, Norfolk Police has said that the man who was arrested on suspicion of grievous bodily harm has been released under investigation. The attack occurred on May the 29th at around 8:45 p.m. while the Out There Festival, in celebration of dance, arts, circus and performance, which attracts around 60,000 people to the town, was in full swing. Police, an ambulance officer vehicle and the East Anglian Air Ambulance all attended the scene of the assault. The air ambulance landed on the seafront near the Sea Life Centre, and the crew then travelled to Crown Road, just a minute's walk from the scene of the stabbing. A police cordon was in place for more than an hour. The victim was assessed and treated at the scene, but was deemed to have the capacity to make his own medical decision, as he refused hospital treatment. When somebody is arrested, is released under investigation, they're free without conditions or a return date, but the investigation continues. Just 5 days before the Trafalgar Road incident, on the bank holiday weekend, a doorman on the Troll Cart Witherspoon pub was stabbed.
Great Yarmouth Borough Council is urging feedback on plans to license privately rented homes as the deadline nears. The council aims to introduce a new selective licensing scheme set to ensure homes are safe and efficient. The public consultation on the proposals, which has already seen more than 200 responses, is due to end on Monday, September the 1st. If approved, the scheme will start next year, lasting for 5 years and cover about 60% of the borough's privately rented properties. This includes Nelson, Southtown and Cobham, Central and Northgate wards, and part of the Yarmouth North Ward, encompassing around 5,000 homes. Councillor Paul Wells, the council's portfolio holder for environment and sustainability, even waste and licensing, said licensing would help us improve standards and ensure properties are managed properly. To make sure any scheme is effective, it is crucial to get as much feedback as we can. There may well be elements of the proposal that need to be finely tuned, such as the number of landlord inspections that would be appropriate. So we are really keen to listen to people who rent their homes privately, landlords, agents and the wider public to gauge opinion. We have carried out detailed research and looked at how similar schemes operate successfully elsewhere across the country, and want to make sure any proposal we put forward is robust, cost-effective and delivers positive outcomes. The consultation offers various methods for people to provide their views, including an online survey, online focus groups and in-person drop-in sessions. To participate in the online survey, visit haveyoursaygreatyarmouth.gov.uk/selective-licensing-consultation. Hard copies of the survey can be requested by emailing slicense@greatyarmouth-yarmouth.co.uk. If implemented, the scheme would operate on a non-profit basis with a proposal licence fee of £784 for landlords, covering the running costs.
Ormiston Cliff Park Primary Academy, that had to be evacuated during a large fire, will reopen for the new school year next week. Firefighters and police officers were called to the school in Ord Avenue in Galston on the final day of term last month. The blaze had broken out on the roof of the building, and fortunately nobody was hurt. It took fire crews from across the county, though, as well as the aerial ladder platform, an hour to extinguish the flames. A spokesperson for the school said, "We're pleased to confirm that the academy will be opening to all children as planned on Wednesday, September the 3rd. The school will be operating as normal, including with our breakfast and after-school clubs, and we are very much looking forward to welcoming our pupils and families back into the academy. They said the reopening follows an immense amount of hard work and preparation by staff and trust colleagues over the summer break. Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service said the fire had started by accident in the roof.
A contractor has been appointed for the Winter Gardens. Plans to restore a unique Norfolk landmark have passed a major milestone. Great Yarmouth Borough Council has appointed the main contractor for the £9 million regeneration of the Winter Gardens. With VINCI Building at the helm of the project, initially enabling works, including cleaning the existing ironwork, are set up to begin in the autumn. Councillor Carl Smith, Borough Council leader, said, "We're delighted to have secured the services of VINCI Building as our main contractor for what is an incredibly exciting scheme for the borough. The Winter Gardens holds a special place in so many people's hearts, and VINCI Building has demonstrated it is well placed with the expertise and experience to help deliver a reimagined landmark we can all be proud of. The work on the building will see the restoration of its original features, including cast and wrought ironwork, and lost details of timber screens to recapture its past grandeur, along with new services for the community. The designs also include new glazing, heating and cooling systems, significant planting, rainwater harvesting, irrigation and low energy and decarbonisation for what is the UK's last surviving Victorian glasshouse on a seaside promenade."
A man has appeared in court accused of attempting to get a 13-year-old girl to send sexualised pictures and videos of herself. Michael Riley, 42, of Bridge Meadow in Hemsby, is also alleged to have attempted to engage in sexual communication with a child and insult a child to look at images of himself engaging in sex acts in February and March 2024. He entered no pleas to the charges, with his case sent to date at Norwich Crown Court on September the 23rd.
A new festival dedicated to the youngest audiences will launch in Great Yarmouth next month. The Ripple Festival, the East of England's first early years arts festival, will run from September the 12th to the 21st, with events aimed at children under the age of 3. Co-created with babies and toddlers, the programme includes original performances and creative experiences in theatres, libraries, community venues and public spaces across the town. Joy Haynes, co-director of Great Yarmouth-based Magic Acorns, said, "Ripple is a joyful, homegrown celebration of children, creativity and community. It's more than a festival. It's a statement about the power and potential of the arts in the earliest years of life. Highlights include Great Big Tiny World by Oily Cart, an immersive sensory theatre experience exploring biodiversity and connection, and Counting Sheep by the Herd, a gentle interactive show for children aged 0 to 3. After Party by Hurley Burley, co-created with Magic Acorns, offers a relaxed social space for new parents and their babies. Most events are free to attend, though booking is required. The festival opens with the Ripple Early Years Professional Symposium at St George's Theatre on Saturday, September the 13th. It will bring together artists and educators, researchers and cultural leaders to discuss policy and practice in early childhood arts. Ms Haynes added, "By hosting world-class early years work in Great Yarmouth, Ripple aims to shift perceptions, create shared family experiences, and place the town firmly on the map as a national leader in early childhood arts innovation. The festival is supported with public funding from Arts Council England. The full programme is available at Magic Acorns, all one word, co.uk/ripple, with symposium tickets via eventbrite.co.uk.
A terraced house, which is home to a rich history and has a network of hidden rooms, is to go under the hammer. 77 Lancaster Road in Great Yarmouth will go to auction on September the 10th. It has a guide price of $100,000 to $120,000, and bidders will get a lot of bang for their buck. It may look like any other home from the front, but it's deceptively large, with three bedrooms, a kitchen and a range of reception rooms, including a lounge, a sitting room, a snug and a dining room. There are also two attic rooms, a workshop, six storerooms and a bar area. A video tour filmed by Auction House East Anglia shows how the rooms form a maze-like pattern, with unexpected staircases and doorways popping up from behind corners. If these surprise features were not enough, the building holds a lot of history. It was once used as a fisherman's smokehouse and was more recently the base of a family-run business called Bloomfield Marquees. Original signage can still be found dotted around the property, which is sold as seen, and the auction will take place online.
James Paget Hospital Maternity Ward. The Hospital Maternity Wards in Galston is returning to its original location after being temporarily relocated. Ward 11 at the James Paget University Hospital, which has been moved to Ward 7, will be back to its original setting after the necessary work is completed. It is due to take place on Tuesday, August the 26th. The move comes after crucial work was undertaken to secure the reinforced autoclaved aerated concrete, RAAC, roof panels on the ward. The internal layout of the ward was also improved, aiming to enhance the support provided to mothers and families. The hospital extended its gratitude to families, visitors and staff for their patience during the temporary relocation. Efforts to secure RAAC panels are continuing across the hospital estate. Ward 12, which caters to older people's medicine, will be temporarily moved to Ward 7 on Thursday, August the 28th, and is expected to stay there until late December 2025, when the work is scheduled to be completed. The hospital is committed to ensuring the safety and comfort of its patients during these necessary upgrades to its infrastructure.
The world's leading offshore wind turbine installation company has more than tripled its revenue for the first half of the year. Carola, a global leader in offshore and wind farm construction, maintenance and decommissioning, has seen its revenue rise to £258 million for the first 6 months of 2025, up by £187 million on the first half of the previous year, £70 million. Full-year revenue is forecasted to range between £508 million and £542 million. Carola, which has an office in Great Yarmouth, published its interim financial results for the first half of 2025 this week, delivering financial performance above expectations. The company, headquarters in Copenhagen, Denmark, reported profit reached £145 million compared to £170,000 in the same period last year. As of today, August 26, Carola's total contract backlog stood at £2.16 billion, providing strong earnings visibility into 2026 and beyond. This year, Carola took delivery of two new build wind turbine installation vessels, Windmaker and Windpace. Both REF vessels are now operating on projects in Taiwan and North America, respectively. In the second half of 2025, Carola will take delivery of an additional two ships, The company is on track with its fleet expansion strategy, and by mid-2027, it will operate a 12-vessel fleet, the largest and most versatile in the offshore wind industry.
That's it for this week's news, which is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Your newsreaders next week will be Margaret and Andy, and so we look forward to your company then for your weekly update on all the latest local news. But in the meantime, we wish you a good week, and as usual, hope that you stay safe and well. And from everyone at Grapevine, it's bye for now, although you can keep listening for Grapevine Extra. Well, we had so much news this week and a lot of stuff from Vision Norfolk that we couldn't accommodate the chat that Dusty, Julie and Margaret had whilst they were at the studio recording. So we thought that what we do is to add it to the end so you can listen at your leisure.
Well, now, we've been talking about what you might be interested in, which is what we try to give you, and I've been reading some lovely articles in the Eastern Daily Press lately called Harking Back. It's looking at the old days with a lady called Emma Brennan. And she was a reporter in the old days. And it sparked a thought in me that we might like to talk about some of the things we really enjoyed on radio, because I'm a radio fan and I always have been and always will be. I find it much more personal media than television. And so I'm just going to read you a little bit of what she says, and then we'll throw it open to the others and say, well, now, come on, what were your favourites? And you can be thinking, and you can send them in to us, if you like, of programmes that you really enjoyed, and we'll know if we're on the right track or not. Anyway, she says, in addition to being able to ask the right questions, I've always thought an essential quality for a journalist is the ability to really listen to the answers. In these times where so much of life comes to us visually, I still believe you can acquire a lot of knowledge if you just prick up your ears and take note. Even photographs are not enough nowadays. With information streamed all day long via online videos, but to me there is nothing more entertaining or enlightening than curling up in a comfy chair with a cup of tea and listening to the radio. As a child, the radio was always present. Mum would listen to Jimmy Young on Radio 2 in the mornings on her portable transistor radio while she was doing the ironing. Then, when there was bad weather of any kind, she would tune into the local radio station, trying to angle the telescoping antenna aerial into a correct direction until it stopped crackling and the voices no longer sounded like Daleks. The local radio was a veritable mine of information on school closures, road blockages, and even lost and found pets. Being portable, the radio also accompanied us on holiday. At home, when we had power cuts, we used an old battery-operated Roberts-style radio covered in red faux snakeskin that was my aunt's. If us kids were unwell and confined to our beds at any time, we would be furnished with the radio to keep us company. Tuning into a comedy or chat show helped to prevent us from going stir-crazy or delirious in a room decorated entirely with psychedelic 1970s floral wallpaper curtains and bedspread. Mum's appreciation of the wireless goes back to her youth in the 1940s when she listened to radio plays. Appointment with Fear. And I remember that well. I used to hide underneath the cushions. Appointment with Fear was a series of half-hour horror dramas originally broadcast on BBC Radio in the 40s and 50s. Each play was introduced by a character known as the Man in Black. And I think his name, if you'll correct me as I'm wrong, was Valentine Dial. Mum said, my parents always went to see my grandparents on a Saturday evening. But when I got a bit older, my friend who lived next door would persuade me to stay at home and we would listen to the Man in Black on the radio. He had a really frightening voice and it was quite scary, especially when I was on my own. And the family also liked to listen to Dick Barton, Special Agent. Now, I can assure you that that was one of my favourites, and I was allowed to stop my homework in order to listen to Dick Barton, Snowy and the Gang. And I loved the theme tune as well. Mum remembers my grandmother singing along to the radio while doing household chores. As a child, I also recall Nan warbling merrily along to hymn tunes on the radio on a Sunday morning. I was fascinated by my grandparents' radio, which was literally huge by comparison to our portable number. It was a typical old clunky Bakelite mid-century model with many dials and scales with numbers. I really wish now, like so many things, that we'd kept it for posterity. As a teenager, I was glued to the radio of a weekend evening, listening to David Kit Jensen's music show. I do my homework in my room with one ear on the wireless, listening out for music from my favourite bands. In those days, I was a bit of a night owl and would carry on listening to John Peel, whose music show followed on, starting at 10 or 11 p.m. Peel was notorious for featuring undiscovered or relatively new bands which were a bit left field, often having live sessions which we would record on a cassette player. I remember it well. I know we weren't really supposed, but most of us did. My love of radio is what enticed me into journalism, and I started my career as a broadcast journalist newsreader. I'd listened to the news on Radio 4 and admired the plummy voice of the BBC announcers. Although I never perfected the posh diction, I did take it as a compliment when listeners told me my voice wasn't annoying, despite radio audiences being quite sizeable in the late 1980s and early 1990s. Never felt that bad, because you couldn't see the listeners. And whenever I got a fit of nerves during a live 6 a.m. bulletin, I'd remember my news editor's sage advice. It's probably only your mother listening to that ungodly hour, he would say. I've recently rediscovered a passion for radio. I know it's fashionable to listen to podcasts whenever it suits. A bit special about tuning in at a certain time to hear the latest episode of The Archers. And let's be honest, that's stood the test of time, has The Archers. 70 years and plus has been that been going, and I've been listening to it on and off ever since it started. My other half, half's father, was a journalist and writer who penned several plays for BBC Radio in the 1970s. We recently dug these out and listened to them on Saturday nights. There was something magical about concentrating on the words he'd written, recognising the time he invested in researching the subject, and the great skill that went into crafting the dialogue. I am in awe of anyone who can create a scene just through the use of spoken dialogue and a few BBC sound effects thrown in. The plays and even the accents of the actors also provided a fascinating insight into the social history at the time they were broadcast. I consider myself fortunate to have loved my job for most of my life, but my only remaining career ambition also relates to the radio. I still live in hope that one day someone will let me read the shipping forecast on Radio 4. North at Syra, south at Syra, northwesterly gale force 8, expected soon. We need to talk to Zeb Soans, because he used to do that, didn't he, on mm-hmm. Radio 4. Any comments, ladies, on that, that piece of useless information I've just given? Wow.
in our household, life used to stop on a Sunday for Round the Horn and Navy Lark.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely nobody spoke apart from laughter for those two programmes. Mm. Right, you, Margaret?
Sunday lunchtime was always very important, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
Oh, definitely, yes. We get very concerned these days about the children, the young people, being glued to screens and things. But in the 1950s, I do seem to remember that Children's Hour was broadcast at tea time every evening from Monday to Friday, and the radio station, known as the Light Programme in those days, which I suppose would be Radio 2 today. And as we all know, TV was practically unknown in those years after World War II. So the magic hour was round about 5 to 6 o'clock and something lovely to look forward to after school. On a Friday, it was really special. Children's hour and no more school until Monday. Hooray! And a lovely broadcaster who was known as Uncle Mac used to introduce the programme, and he was the mainstay. His name was actually Derek McCulloch, and he was much loved. And at the end of every programme, he would finish with the words, "Good night, children, everywhere." Yes, and this was because the programme had been broadcast through World War II, when many children were evacuated, separated from their families and often living in very difficult conditions. And so we gathered round the radio set for Children's Hour at tea time, all of us hoping that the reception would be clear. In those days, there was quite often a lot of interference, which the older folk would call it them old atmosphericals, which was a good description. And today it would drive everyone to distraction, I suppose, but we were just used to it, and we always managed somehow. I don't remember a great deal about the actual programmes, but there needed to be something for all age groups as far as possible. If I could just mention one real favourite, was Tales from Toy Town,
which was introduced by
the very catchy tune. Yes, Larry the Lamb. He was usually the main character, and he was always getting into scrapes and singing, "I'm only a little lamb, sir." And there was also Ernest the policeman, the mayor, and I think a very grumpy shopkeeper. Another series was about sinister goings-on at the Tower of London, and I recall really thrilling, and it opened with words such as, "He who holds the Tower of London has the keys of England in his hands." I remember one episode when a character called Father Pole was being taken out to be executed. Scary, maybe. But haven't children always enjoyed being scared? You know, there's just a few thoughts about Children's Hour.
Of course they have.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Not Julie, she can't bear it.
No, I'm a wimp.
But you're a wimp. You're a wimp, you are.
I admit it.
Yes, I know.
Sorry, Margaret.
No. You take over now if you'd like to, Julie.
Well, have you finished your story, though?
Well, I have some more, but I thought you might be fed up to listen to me.
No, you chally on, because this is completely...
Okay, all right then.
When you two have finished your domestic...
There was also a series called Cowley's Farm. And once some children who were due to visit the farm when there had been an outbreak of some kind of infection and there was a real scare, managed to convince the farmer's wife that it would be perfectly safe for them to visit because they had somehow contrived to go through the tank where the sheep were dipped. I don't know what health and safety would make of that nowadays. And another programme called Children's Favourites was broadcast on Saturday mornings at about 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Yes. And going to the children's film show at the cinema wasn't really quite... If that wasn't quite your cup of tea, you could listen to, instead, to Children's Favourites. And many of the songs were very catchy and memorable. that one that was often played was Nelly the Elephant packed her trunk and said goodbye to the circus. I thought that was wonderful. I imagine that would cause quite a stir today. However, just as a time when we felt in need of something a bit more sophisticated, a wonderful series called Journey into Space was broadcast on Monday evenings. This was about 1954, and it was very advanced stuff indeed. It involved a crew of four men in a spaceship called the Discovery, who were to make a landing on the moon and presumably die in the process. Needless to say, they succeeded, and after many amazing adventures, they made it safely back to Earth. Although at one point, they did get involved with some time travellers and found themselves stranded in a remote area which would later be the middle of the Mediterranean Sea. And there were two follow-on series about a journey to Mars, which was equally exciting, and another one too. All three services have been rebroadcast on Radio 4 Extra in the last few years, and of course a lot of the attitudes were very, very dated. They were of their time. One incident struck me especially after landing on the moon safely, the crew waited for the dust which they had stirred up to settle. The captain, whose name was Jet Morgan, said, "Gentlemen, here we are." And they all relaxed for 5 minutes to have a fag. So they would nowadays, wouldn't they? But anyway, it was great stuff. And in spite of all that, it was wonderful entertainment and sparked off an interest which is actually still with me today. And I think I'll leave it at that point because I'll be branching off to all sorts of things.
Oh, okay.
And time presses.
Well, it has to be said that the three of us don't know what the other person's doing.
Do we
know what we're doing? Mm. But when we write our things at home and we don't know what we're saying. But so these two have been about radios, and mine is actually about communication, which I suppose is sort of similar-ish. And communication is an imperative part of our lives, isn't it? And it comes in many forms. I remember taking a part in a course on nonverbal communication way back whilst I was training to be a youth leader. To be fair, I truthfully think that my acting skills gave me a serious advantage. And Ronan Keating wasn't around then, but you may know one of his beautiful songs entitled "You Say It Best When You Say Nothing
at all.
Mm. Sometimes that sentiment is correct between lovers, for instance, the deaf or verbally impaired, but mostly we do rely on the speaking voice. And I'd like to share with you an experience I encountered recently. Now imagine the scene. It's a beautiful morning and the sun is shining and I've got an enjoyable day planned. As usual, one of my first jobs is to check my mobile phone for my messages and emails. And I enter my PIN and a notice tells me it is incorrect. I re-enter it several times with the same result. By now, I am talking to the phone with increasing exasperation, explaining to a piece of unresponsive plastic that it's the same number I've had since 1994 and I should be the best judge of whether it is correct or not. Oh, my word. I have no choice now, in desperate frustration, to throw it through the window or to go to the Vodafone store in Lowestoft, which is a 45-minute car journey. I decide, for the sake of my sanity and the aggravation of a broken window could cause, to visit the store was the preferable option. So the fellow was extremely supportive and sympathetic as he imparted those words I seriously didn't want to hear. "I'm sorry," he said. "There's nothing I can do. While we have blocked your phone, it happens sometimes for security." I was holding a useless piece of kit. At great expense, I purchased a new phone, which he set up for me whilst I fought back the tears at the realisation I had lost absolutely everything. Treasured photographs, ongoing message conversations, emails, all my contacts, both phone numbers and emails addresses, absolutely everything. Dusty, as only she can, said that I wasn't too bright to rely on technology and what happened to the old pen and paper method. You can hear us saying it, can't you? Right then, I had no argument and gratefully accepted those details she had of mutual friends. But it did make me realise, though, how much communication mattered. And without the ability to communicate, how cut off from everyone we are. We're thinking about your people up on the moon.
That's right.
Indeed.
Absolutely.
When a ship arrives in port to discharge its cargo, the seafarer's chaplain and ship visitors go aboard bringing precious gifts in the form of phone cards or internet lines to contact the sailors to their families. To be honest, I hadn't given it a thought. But, of course, there's no means of using a mobile in the middle of the ocean, miles away from shore and civilization.
So you did read that book I gave you?
I did. You see, well, you don't think I read, but I do. So it's not it's not just a human trait either. Birds can be heard calling to each other. Dogs bark and territories are therefore marked. Research confirms whales can hear one another's song 1,000 miles away in perfect conditions. Communication, again, in the most amazing form of nature. Now, my father, as some of you know, because I've mentioned it before, was a Royal Engineer serving in Burma during the Second World War. And our household resonated with lots of military expressions. Clean ones, I hasten to add, although I can't vouch for the language he used in the confines of his shed. But if we were going out somewhere, he would always say, pick up your monkeys and parrots, which meant at the time to me, get your gear together, we're off. Now I know that when they were moving from one location to another in the jungle, pet monkeys and parrots were taken along. If those creatures sensed danger, they would screech, alerting not only other species and the soldiers of animal predators, but equally enemy forces were likely to be lurking in the undergrowth waiting to ambush. Absolutely basic communication, but just as vital in these terrifying conditions as Morse code. Our most convenient way of communication now is our radio, which is what we've been talking about.
Sure.
On-the-spot reporters relay situations as they happen. We hear about atrocities firsthand. How do we react? Do we think it's awful, but thankfully not on our doorstep? Don't get me wrong, for that we must be extremely grateful. But I'd like to think that we send food and general supplies to collection centres to help refugees. This also is an act of communication to these poor people, to know that folk way across the world who they will never meet are thinking and caring about them. Also, don't ever underestimate the power of non-verbal communication. A friendly smile, an understanding look, a touch of a hand or shoulder can make such a difference in communicating how much you really care. We here at Grapevine communicate with you all weekly, different crews each week, and we hope the news and stories we communicate to you make a difference to your day. La 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 la